the TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
I have always said that cheerleaders are absolutely 100% athletes. They are just as much athletes as a lot of the folks that are taking to the court and the field in high school sports. This is a horrible story coming out of Denver and the Denver Public School System. An investigation is underway by the Denver Public Schools and the Denver Police Department over an exercise used at cheer practices at a high school this past summer. In this video that is being widely circulated on social media, several cheerleaders at East High School can be seen pushing down one of their teammates, if you will, trying to force her to do a split.
No.
You're just gonna make it worse.
Stop me.
Oh, absolutely. The police should investigate that. Absolutely. 100%. On this video, the girl is seen crying out in pain. She's asking the coach several times to please stop. And in a letter to East High School parents there in Denver, the superintendent, Tom Boesberg, said that the principal, the assistant principal, and the cheer coach have been placed on leave during the investigation, and rightfully so. They go on to say, "We absolutely prohibit any practices that place our students' physical and mental health in jeopardy. We do not and will not allow any situation in which a student is forced to perform an activity or exercise beyond the point at which they express their desire to stop." So, yeah, absolutely. All of these people should be placed on leave, and the coach should be fired. It should be it. Done. Last day. Vaya con Dios. Because they could have done serious, irreparable harm to this young lady, not only physically, but also emotionally. So, absolutely. Absolutely. These, you would almost... I would hazard to say I had never experienced that. I played football in high school and college, and you never saw anybody doing that. Yeah, they would push you to your limits, but they would never actually physically try to make you go beyond what you were capable of doing. What they would do was they would come along and they would give you exercise, strength training, stretching, and things like that to make sure that you could naturally go beyond where you are right now. But to physically push somebody down and try to force this young woman to do a split, it was just, I mean, it's hard to listen to and even harder to imagine that in 2017 that we are treating people like this. So, yeah, the cheerleader coach should absolutely 100% be fired for this. And I think also they should look at some of the students that are taking place in this too. Some of the students that have their hands, I mean, they're holding her arms, they're pushing her down, and yeah, I think a lot of people need to answer for their actions in this case. It's just disgusting.
Now, here's more of the TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
Good morning. It's 7:20, 20 minutes past 7 o'clock on The Big Talker, 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. Coming up, going to be talking about the shooting yesterday, and Virginia's on King. I'll give you the latest details on that. 8:20 this morning, going to give you a chance to win yourself a fantastic weekend at the Bojangles Southern 500. We'll have our police file at 8:40, and it is Flush It Friday, where we're going to be flushing the most ridiculous news story of the week. If you would like to give us some ideas about which news story you would like to see flushed, why don't you give me an email, charlie@WTMA.com. That's charlie@WTMA.com. You can always reach out on Facebook and Twitter and all of that. All right, Jay Thomas has passed away. You might remember him. I mean, Jay had a lot of different roles throughout his career. He was on. He was the co-owner of the deli on Morkinmindy. He played ice hockey there, an ice hockey player who was married to Carla on Cheers. He was Jack Stein in Love and War, won two Emmys for his guest appearances as Jerry Gold on Murphy Brown. But one of the things he was really, really famous for was every year he would show up on the David Letterman show right at Christmas time, and he would tell the Lone Ranger story. And this became incredibly popular and incredibly famous. And if you've never heard Jay Thomas's Lone Ranger story, here it is.
I started in radio like everyone else in a little small market. Mm-hmm. I was in, at the time, Charlotte, North Carolina.
Right.
I was in college. My friend Mo had come to town. He has long hair, and he'd brought some. We were herbed up.
Okay.
And the Lone Ranger was going around opening Dodge dealerships. And Mr. Clayton Moore.
Clayton Moore.
He wasn't ever Clayton Moore. He was the Lone Ranger. Mm-hmm. He took it very seriously. He had the six guns, the mask. He wore the outfit.
Wherever he went.
Right. The hat, the whole thing. So they call me up and they say, you go down and open the dealership with the Lone Ranger and announce it for the station. And at the end of it, I get into my old beat-up Volvo. And they say, you know, the car didn't come to take the Lone Ranger back to the red carpet inn where he was staying, where we'd put him in the red carpet. And I said, well, hell, I guess we could take him in this old beat up Volvo. I said, do you mind? He didn't mind. He gets in the back seat. Mike Martin and I are driving and we're completely blitzed. And it's 5 o'clock traffic and a man backs up into my Volvo and smashes the headlights and pulls away.
Oh, no.
So we begin chasing him in a four-cylinder Volvo,
right.
And the Lone Ranger is in the back seat, and we forget that the Lone Ranger is with us. So we chase this guy through the streets of Charlotte, and we finally cut him off. And he's in a Buick, and he gets out, a middle-aged guy, and he goes, what are you doing? I said, hell, man, you smashed into my car. And he says, well, I didn't do that. I said, hell, you didn't. We're going to call the police. We're going to call the cops. He said, really? Well, who do you think they're going to believe? You two hippies or me? And the Lone Ranger gets out of the back of the Volvo. and he says,
they'll believe me, citizen.
Jay Thomas with his famous Lone Ranger story, made popular every year on the David Letterman show. Jay Thomas dead at the age of 69. From what his family say is his about with cancer. All right, 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. That's 556-1250. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about the shooting yesterday. Virginia's on King. Just a tragic situation happening yesterday. A lot of kudos going out to our first responders, our EMT, our fire, of course, our police departments. Everybody was involved in this thing yesterday, and it was just It was a very tense situation yesterday down there on King Street as they had the whole place cordoned off, even including Marion Square. So more on this coming up right after the news break, right here at the bottom of the hour.
The TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
Good morning. It's 7:40, 20 minutes until 8 o'clock on The Big Talker, 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. Glad to have you along with us on this Friday morning. As the entire Charleston area is in shock this morning after what happened yesterday, downtown Virginia's on King, when this disgruntled employee walked in and took the life of executive chef at Virginia's, Shane Whidden. He was shot and killed during this incident yesterday with a suspected disgruntled employee. It ended up being a hostage situation at the restaurant yesterday afternoon. Deputy Coroner Sheila Williams released that 37-year-old Shane Whidden was the homicide victim last night, just a little bit after 11 o'clock. Charleston police, of course, responded yesterday to a potential shooting. We started hearing these a little after noon yesterday in reference to a shooting within the 400 block of King Street. Now, according to the Charleston County Coroner's Office, Whidden was transported by Charleston County EMS to the Medical University of South Carolina, where he was pronounced dead. A lot of agencies were on the scene. SLED, Charleston Police Department, Charleston County Coroner's Office was there. Of course, firefighters and EMS there. There was about a three-hour hostage situation. And just before 1 o'clock yesterday, Charleston Police Department announced that the gunman had been shot. Now, he remains in critical condition this morning, although they have not identified the gunman in the shooting yesterday. Mayor Tecklenburg said that and I don't know how Mayor Tecklenburg knows this, but Mayor Tecklenburg said the gunman had a history of mental health issues. So we're going to take the mayor at his word for that. I thought the mayor did a good job yesterday. This was really the first real test that he had as far as a situation like this is concerned since he's been mayor of Charleston. So our thanks and our appreciation goes out to all the law enforcement that was involved yesterday. You guys did a fantastic job in bringing us the information that we needed and, of course, handling this situation as well as it was done. Now, they had a press conference. I guess it was around, I'm trying to remember, go back and remember. It was the first press conference that the mayor had with Charles Francis. They were standing there and they were talking about the situation as it was unfolding. And you heard a loud bang during that press conference. And we don't know if that was a concussion grenade. There's still a lot of things, a lot of information that we don't have right now. And of course, I'm sure they'll release that to us. But there was a loud bang during this press conference, and everybody was wondering what that was. They didn't know if it was just shot or maybe a concussion grenade or anything like that. And some people are speculating now that that may have been the gunman being shot. He was shot yesterday by police. He is again in critical condition, but we do not know his identity at this time. But nonetheless, the entire Charleston area, and especially those in the restaurant industry, the food and beverage industry downtown, are all just in absolute shock this morning over the death of Shane Whidden, who was the executive chef at Virginia's. He'd been in the kitchen at Virginia's since August, last August, about a year ago, after he came up from Sea Island, Georgia, back in 2014. He took the position of the head chef there at the former Union Provisions. He also worked at Charleston Grill under Bob Wagner and later under Scott Crawford. Bennett Hospitality has not released a statement on this yet. As far as we know, they may have by now, but I haven't seen anything like that. Again, we've still got a lot more details to learn in this shooting, including the identity of the shooter yesterday, but just a sad, sad day yesterday as we heard that this former employee, and not, he wasn't a former employee for very long. We heard that he was fired just yesterday morning and came back. He was a dishwasher, came back into the restaurant, told everybody, at first he told them all to get down on the floor, and then he was like, no, y'all go out the back. He said there was a new sheriff in town. He was holding a revolver while he was doing that. Of course, you can imagine the chaos that was going on, but just a very, very sad situation yesterday downtown Charleston. And our thoughts and our prayers go out to the family and the friends and the co-workers of Shane Whidden in this tragic, tragic loss yesterday downtown Charleston.
WTMA! It's Charlie James on 1250 WTMA.
Amidst everything that we're hearing in the national news, you know, I really can't help but to think that all of this is in some way, you know, the bringing down of the Confederate monuments, not just Confederate monuments, but basically anything to do with actual American history. I can't help but think that a lot of these things, this is all orchestrated. This is some sort of a plan to keep your eye off the ball. You know, we've got folks there calling for the John C. Calhoun Memorial to come down there at Marion Square. They're talking for even Mount Rushmore. There's one lawmaker calling for Mount Rushmore to be blown up. They want to blow up the statue there at Stone Mountain in North Georgia. So it's amazing what's going on. But all of this, I do believe, is designed to keep your attention off what is actually going on in Washington, D.C. Now, we had a former leader of the Democratic National Party, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She had hired a couple of guys, as well as a lot of other Democrats there in Washington, hired these Awan brothers to go in, and they're IT guys. They were responsible for their internet technology, and apparently what had happened was they had access to a lot of these lawmakers' hard drives on their laptop and their desktop computers. Well, we told you not long ago that one of the AWANs was caught there at Dulles out in up in Washington trying to leave the country. He had wired about $300,000 to Pakistan. They got him for wire fraud and all of that. Well, Debbie Wasserman Schultz came out and she claimed that this was all because of some sort of racism or discrimination, a victim of religious discrimination. Now, how all of this came about was the AWANs, this one of the Imran AWAN, he had rented a home to a Marine. All right. While the Marine was in the home, he found these hard drives that the AWANs had. Well, AWAN was going to sue this Marine, and the Marine said, bump that. I'm going to turn these things over to the FBI. Now, understand, this is an African-American Marine. He votes Democrat. But now he's fed up with it. He said that he is absolutely pissed off that Debbie Wasserman Schultz is saying that this is some sort of bigotry. The guy's name is Andre Taggart. He's a key witness in this FBI investigation into the AWANs. Like we said, Taggart rented that home in Northern Virginia. He revealed that he discovered these smashed hard drives. And we had heard about this. Remember that? I mean, the Clinton campaign taking and smashing hard drives. This seems to be a big thing with the Democrats there. He found these smashed hard drives that AWAN had left behind when he attempted to flee the United States and to head for Pakistan. AWAN apparently, like I said, threatened to sue Taggart to get those hard drives back, but he gave them up to the FBI. So Taggart said, I just want these guys locked up and exposed now. The people who facilitated them should also be locked up as far as I'm concerned. Capitol Police first. And remember that, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, threatening the chief of the Capitol Police about this investigation, trying to obstruct justice? But we don't hear a lot about that in the news anymore. Of course we don't. So the Capitol Police first named AWAN as a central figure into this probe into security breaches back on February the 2nd. Federal grand jury indicted AWAN and his wife, Alvy, on August the 17th for bank fraud, false statements, and unlawful monetary transactions. Alvy left the country back in March, and she is reportedly under protection from the Pakistani government. Well, of course she is, right? Of course she would be under protection because we don't want any of this information to get out. So all of this stuff that you're seeing going on right now, please understand, it is orchestrated to keep your mind off the real stories.
The TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
Sherry Bernardi was just telling you a story about your eclipse glasses. Yes, they are recyclable, the cardboard part. And they do have an expiration date. They're good for about 3 years. So you will not be able to use them for the 2024 eclipse that's coming up. That's going to go from Texas, I believe, all the way up to Maine. So no, and you don't want them hanging around the house anyway, right? I mean, you're going to forget about those things. Where did I put the honey? Where did I put those eclipse glasses? I can't find them. So there's another issue. Now, doctors around the country are saying that they're seeing some folks coming into their offices stating that they are seeing some folks that may have gotten some damage trying to watch this eclipse. So if you're experiencing blurred or impaired vision after watching the solar eclipse, you may want to go to the eye doctor. Now, it's not going to hurt. That's the thing, because there are no pain receptors in the back of the retina. All right, so no nerve cell. Well, they're nerves, but there are no pain receptors in the back of the eye. So, so far, they say they haven't seen any patients with damage from looking at the eclipse, but they've had a few customers experiencing pain. Are you ready for this? Are you ready for this? Ophthalmologists across the country are saying that they are seeing patients now who are experiencing pain because they put sunscreen on their eyeballs. I am not making this up. Yeah, that's it's an absolutely true story. They are. What would make you think that that was a good? We're in the, you know, we've got all this information at our fingertips. You got it on your desktop. You got it on your laptop. You got it on your tablet. You got it on your phone. Anywhere in the, all you got to do is click, 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 and you can find out how to watch the eclipse safely. But yet there were some people out there, and I wonder if this was like a thing on Facebook or on Twitter or something like that, where somebody said, hey, I got an idea. Why don't you put sunscreen on your eyeballs so you don't get them burned? No, that's not the way it works. So patients putting sunscreen on their eyeballs. I wonder if it was a 50. I guess, yeah, I don't know what they are. They recommend what the United States whatever they recommend as far as putting sunscreen on your eyeballs. Holy cow. That's why I don't believe in evolution. That's why I just don't believe in evolution. We would not have made it this far if we had to depend on the average intelligence of human beings. Oh, my gosh. Coming up in just a few minutes, right around 8:20, we're going to be giving you a chance to win yourself tickets to the Bojangles Southern 500. We're talking, this is a fantastic whole weekend package. You get the Xfinity race, the Saturday race. You're going to get tickets to the Sunday race. You're going to get admission to the pre-race concert. You get wristbands for that. You're going to get all kinds of great stuff from Bojangles. So we'll have that for you coming up at 8:20 this morning. Also, right around 8:40, we will have our police file for you. And Flush It Friday is coming up in the 9 o'clock hour because we're going to be flushing the most ridiculous news story of the week. So you don't want to miss out on that. If you've got any ideas for what the most ridiculous news story of the week is, please, you can always email us, charlie@WTMA.com, or you can get on Facebook or on Twitter. Heck, I'm even on Instagram. I think I'm even on Snapchat, although I've never even downloaded the app. Somebody sign me up for that.
Hurricane season is here, and 1250 WTMA wants to make sure you're ready. Download the WTMA Hurricane Preparedness Guide from WTMA.com. It's free, and it's full of life-saving information. Brought to you in part by East Bay Deli.
1250 WTMA.
Now, the TMA Morning Show continues with Charlie James.
Coming up at 9:35 this morning, we've got Flush It Friday brought to you by Roto-Rooter as we flush the most useless news item, news story of the week. And of course, if you would like to nominate a news story, you can always get in touch with me, charlie@WTMA.com. Of course, all on Facebook and all of your social media platforms. 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning, because right now I want to give you a chance to win a fantastic prize pack out at Darlington. Now, our winner this morning is going to get a pair of Xfinity race tickets for the September the 2nd race, and you're going to be qualified to win a family experience. The prize pack that includes a four pack of tickets to qualifying, the Xfinity race, the pre-race concert, the Bojangles Southern 500, plus tailgate meal from Bojangles. So you don't want to miss out on that. 556-1250 is the number. We're going to start with caller number 7 right now. You will have to answer a slight little trivia question.
And Charlie will announce the grand prize winner before 10 o'clock this morning.
Oh, outstanding. Outstanding. That's fantastic. So we'll start with caller number 7 right now, 556-1250. Like I said, our qualifier will get tickets to the Xfinity race and then be qualified for this amazing prize pack out there at Darlington. We do have a little trivia question for you, though, this morning to make sure that, just to make it a little level playing field. All right, 556-1250, that's the number. Also, coming up in just a few minutes at 8:40 this morning, we'll have our police file for you. Let's go to caller 7 right now and say, hey, who's this?
Hey, this is Cleve.
All right, Cleve, got a little trivia question for you, buddy. We know that Darlington holds the record for the largest margin of victory. Now, that was with Ned Jarrett back in 1965. He won by 14 laps. Darlington also holds the record for the narrowest margin of victory. That was 2003 when Ricky Craven edged out Kurt Busch. Was it by 0.5 seconds, 0.02 seconds, or 0.002 seconds?
0.2.
Not it. Thank you, buddy. I appreciate you calling in. Hey, who's this? Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, who's this?
This is Al Mundt.
All right, Al. Ricky Craven edged out Kurt Busch in 2003. Was it by 0.5 seconds, 0.02 seconds, or 0.002 seconds?
0.002.
You are exactly right. 0.002 seconds. Congratulations, buddy. You just picked yourself up a pair of tickets to the Xfinity race on September the 2nd, and now you're qualified for that great family experience prize pack. How about that?
Awesome. That's fantastic.
All right, man. I'm going to put you on hold. John Quincy is going to get some information from you here. Yeah, that whole family experience prize pack includes four-pack tickets to qualifying, the Xfinity race, the pre-race concert, Bojangles Southern 500, plus tailgate meals from Bojangles. So you don't want to miss out on that. That's fantastic. That really is good. And we're going to be announcing the grand prize winner coming up before 10 o'clock this morning. I was actually at that race in Darlington when Ricky Craven beat Kurt Busch by 0.002 seconds. It was a good day. It was a real good day. I tell you what, it's just something about NASCAR. Once you get the smell of that 110 octane in your nostrils, oh, you're hooked. You are. I remember the first time, my first race, NASCAR race that I went to was at Darlington. Since then, I've been to Daytona, been to Atlanta and up in Charlotte. And it's a lot of fun. It really, really is. And I always like to watch NASCAR on TV because you could watch it, take a nap, and wake up and still watch it. So that's awesome, especially those 500-mile races. All right, 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. Speaking of sports a little bit, the Connor, this Mayweather fight is just, I think it's ridiculous. I absolutely think this fight with Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor coming up, what is it? Is it tomorrow night? Yeah, that is, it's ridiculous. I don't know how Conor McGregor thinks he's going to hang with Floyd Mayweather. Now, right now, they're looking at about 60% of the betting. I think it may be a little more than that. The betting going on, people are betting on McGregor on this fight. Well, they're looking for the big payday here. And it's going to be, this thing's going to be Saturday night out in Las Vegas. I do think it is absolutely a ridiculous fight. Conor McGregor might want to take a lot of selfies of himself over the, you know, today and tomorrow. Because I don't think he's going to look the same coming up Sunday morning. I think you might not be able to recognize him. MMA and boxing are two completely different forms of pugilism, we'll say. Two completely different sports. And for McGregor to think that he's going to be able to get into a guy who was, what is he, 47? And it's just unbelievable. There's a reason they call boxing the sweet science. And I think Mayweather is just going to absolutely pick him to pieces in this fight. Now, one of the things is that we're hearing now that Mayweather may not be taking this fight as seriously as he should take it. Apparently, he owns a strip club there in Vegas, and he's going to be partying every night at that strip club. We all know what that does to your legs. So I think if McGregor really wants to have a shot at winning this fight, I would have to be looking at, well, first of all, I'd have my spies out in Las Vegas making sure that Mayweather was out partying every night. And if he is, I would just try to rope-a-dope him for as long as I could, make sure the guy's legs wear out and he gets winded, and then go in and attack him. But to go straight ahead, I think McGregor is going to be in a lot of trouble in this fight coming up on Saturday night. I don't see it. And I don't understand. I don't like either one of these guys. I don't like Conor McGregor. I think he's brash. I think he's arrogant. I think he's ridiculous. Floyd Mayweather, although a fantastic fighter, I haven't liked him since that sucker punch against Victor Ortiz back in 2011. You remember that? I don't like either one. I could care less about this fight than any other fight that's out there. So, but we'll see. Again, if McGregor This is an interesting story. If McGregor were to upset Mayweather in this fight, it's going to break Las Vegas. It's going to absolutely, and they say the MGM Grand is just, it could go broke over this thing because they're going to have to pay out a lot of money for these people that are voting on McGregor. We hear that Mayweather has bet $5 million on himself in this fight, so it could be a pretty darn big payday.
WTMA, the TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
It's 8:40 on the Big Talker 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. And, of course, it's Friday. Time to go to the phones and talk to Malcolm out in Somerville. How are you, Malcolm?
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. What's up?
Listen, I got a couple of questions for you. I'm kind of confused. One thing is, why the big secret on who this guy's identity is? Have you heard any word on that?
No, I haven't. I haven't heard any word. I know that he is in the hospital with in critical condition, but they have not released his identity.
Yeah, that's kind of strange. And
now, why do you think it's strange, though, Malcolm? Why do you think they would not release his identity just yet?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it was maybe event. You know, we want to know who it is.
I agree. And, I would like to find out who this guy is.
Yeah, sure. And now, yesterday, the news media was out covering the event.
Right.
But this thing happened out in the city of Charleston, right?
Right.
Well, why was the county sheriff running the show, telling the news media what they did, what they were going to do, and the black interim chief of Charleston police, Chief Taylor,
right,
was just staying on the side?
Well, Chief Taylor, wait a minute. Did you not see the press conference with Chief Taylor?
I saw the county sheriff,
Right. You saw Al Cannon. Now, Malcolm, I'm sorry if you missed that. But you did miss it because right around 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon, they had the Mayor Tecklenburg and Charles Francis from the City of Charleston Police Department, the public information officer with the City of Charleston, they held a press conference. There wasn't a whole lot of stuff to report. They didn't have any details in that time. Remember, that was an active situation that was still going on, so they couldn't really reveal a whole lot as to what the police were doing. Then at 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon, they held another press conference with the mayor and Chief Taylor.
But that's another thing. Why was the mayor involved in this?
Because he's the mayor?
I mean, you have crimes going on all the time. I don't understand why the mayor has to come on the scene.
Well, because it was a major event. Well, Malcolm, I don't remember you getting all upset when the mayor came on, when Mayor Riley came on during the Emmanuel 9. I don't remember anybody getting upset over that.
I'm not upset. I'm just curious. Why would the mayor have to come on the scene when we got police personnel out there?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking that this case is a little bit more something that we're missing here. But anyway, good talking to you. And stay woke, Mr. James. Stay woke.
You stay woke there, Malcolm. You stay woke. 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. It's time for our police files. In our police files this morning, we want to say a big thank you to all of our local police officers, no matter what Malcolm says, who did such a fantastic job yesterday in keeping the public informed and safe during this event that happened downtown when this former employee walked into the restaurant downtown and opened fire, killing one person. We do know that the assailant was shot by police and is in critical condition this morning. So again, a big, big thank you to all of our police and our emergency responders for how well they handled that situation. I was very impressed with that. And I was also impressed with Mayor Tecklenburg yesterday and the way that he handled that situation. So a very big congratulations and thank you to you guys. I know the last thing you want to do is get in front of those cameras and report anything like this happening in our community. But I thought you did a very fine job. I thought Al Cannon did a great job. Charles Francis did a fantastic job yesterday. Another story in our police files, 5-year-old kid near Houston, Texas, named Kevin Will Jr., started kindergarten this week, but his dad couldn't be there for it. Kevin Will Sr. was a cop with the Houston Police Department back in 2011. When he was on the side of the road talking to a witness about a hit and run, when he was struck and killed by a drunk driver. The driver ended up getting 55 years in jail for it. Kevin Jr. was born 3 months later, so he never got to meet his dad. But he got a whole bunch of other people who care about him. His mom, Alicia, went online a few weeks ago and asked if any of the cops in the area wanted to walk him to his first day of school since his dad couldn't be there. She got a much bigger response than expected. A much bigger response.
This morning was Kevin Will's first day of kindergarten. Unfortunately, Kevin has never met his father because his father was killed in the line of duty back in May of 2011. And it was an important day for our Blue family to come together and show support and be there for Kevin on his first day.
What we did is we set up, as you can see, we got the happy first day of school for Kevin. And we had a ton of officers, including our Mountain Patrol, show up and escort Kevin a couple blocks to school. We wanted to show the family that we are still here, we are one family, and make sure he's loved and supported.
Almost 100 cops showed up from all over the state at Kevin's house on Tuesday. A bunch were on horseback. Kevin even got to ride on horse part of the way. There was a police helicopter flying overhead. His mom said some of the cops had been around before to check on Kevin and to help out. So this was just another reminder of how they've always got his back. So, again, the good guys out there, the good guys. Let's go to Chuck out in Goose Creek. He wants to talk about Malcolm. Good morning, Chuck. How are you?
Good morning. Great. I just want to make a quick comment on Malcolm. Why did he not complain about the mayor of Charlottesville and a lot of these other cities stepping forward, saying something would happen in their cities?
Right. I mean, that's part of the mayor's job.
Yes, sir.
To be there.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chuck. I appreciate you. Trey is in Mount Pleasant. Trey, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I would like to say that I agree with Malcolm, and I would also like to add, I was very impressed with that the mayor, not knowing the assailant's identity,
Ryan,
was able to determine that he suffered from mental illness, and I think that...
Well, I don't know. Wait. Hold on, Trey. I don't know. Nobody's saying they don't know his identity. What they're saying is, I mean, they just haven't released the name of the guy. I mean, they had plenty of witnesses yesterday that knew exactly who this guy was because of eyewitness reports, but they just haven't released his name.
So there was none of the eyewitnesses were able to even give us a glimpse of anything about this man, what he looked like, his disposition, any sort of description?
Absolutely. They gave a lot of descriptions about the guy. They even described what he was wearing when he walked into. They said he was still wearing his uniform from when he was fired earlier in the day. Now, why they're not releasing his identity yet, that I don't know. That's up in the air. But I appreciate you calling in, Trey. Thank you very much. Again, I think everybody handled it quite well yesterday. However, I will agree with Trey. I will agree with Malcolm on this. I don't know why they're holding this guy's identity up from the public. I mean, we know who the victim was. We would like to know who the perpetrator was.
1250 WTMA.
It's Charlie James on 1250 WTMA.
Good morning. It's about 5 minutes until 9 o'clock on the Big Talker 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. Let's go to the phones and talk to Thomas west of the Ashley. Thomas, how are you?
Hey, how are you?
Good. What's up?
Just wanted to make a point that I think yesterday proved that a concealed weapons permit could be a smart thing for somebody to look into. I think that the events yesterday would have unfolded in a less tragic way had somebody in that restaurant, you know, been carrying a weapon to protect themselves and others.
You know, we make that jump sometimes, Thomas, but you never really know what you would do in a situation like that, because what we're hearing is this guy walked in, he told everybody to get down, and then he decided to let them go out of the back of the restaurant. We don't know the timeline as to when the guy decided to start shooting. So I think even if you had a concealed carry permit and a guy walks in and he says, everybody get down, and you stand up and you shoot that guy,
right,
you may be in a world of trouble.
Right.
For doing that. So, I mean, you have to take some of these things. Now, if he walked in, he was brandishing a gun, and he just started shooting the place up or something, and then you jumped up, drew down on the guy, and pulled the trigger, you would probably be justified in doing that. But if a guy is not, you see what I mean? I mean, there's correct. Lawyers out there that will absolutely try to break you completely for doing something like that. I appreciate you calling in, Thomas. Grant is in Somerville. Grant, how are you?
Fine. Hey, yesterday, whenever he went to the restaurant, he did have the gun when he said, "I'm the new sheriff in town."
Okay, but that's all right. But that's, and again, you have to wonder. I mean, because again, yeah, well, I don't know anybody that's been in this situation where if a guy walks in, the guy has got a gun down by his side or whatever.
Yes, I mean that's he's free meat. He's going to die of iron poisoning.
Do you think, I mean, and I think if you do something like that, this is where we really have to.
I mean, you got to think of what his intent is. I mean, he's in there telling everybody to get down. He's got a gun.
So if you go to court, Grant, and I'm not denying the fact that people should have concealed carry permits. I'm all for that. But if you draw down on the guy and you pull the trigger, everybody's life changes. Your life changes at that moment completely. And there are lawyers out there. There are lawyers out there that are just going to do everything they can to make sure you go to jail.
Absolutely. I understand that. But the thing about it is when you take a concealed weapons permit test and the stuff, which I have, when you take that course, you know going into that is a possibility.
Right.
You are carrying a card-carrying concealed weapons permit person. You know that that's a possibility that's going to happen. But what it is he's got a weapon next to his side. He obviously has the intention of doing somebody harm. And, I mean, I don't see anything, you know, issue with that. Now, the other thing is yesterday.
I'm sorry. You're breaking up a little bit. Go ahead. All right, repeat that.
He never said he had mental illness. He said it is thought that he may be mentally challenged of some sort. Mm-hmm. He didn't say he had a mental illness. He said he was thought to be mentally challenged. Or have some issue or something
right,
like that.
Right, so,
he came out and straight accused him. He said it's a possibility that, you know, that he is.
Yeah, we'll go back and thing. We'll go back and listen to that. I mean, because right now, again, we don't know who this guy was. We don't.
That is strange.
It is strange that
we knew, it's a whole lot quicker than what's going on. I mean, I'm not sure what it is or who it is or they're holding it back because of his injury right now, I'm not sure, but I figured his information would be out quicker than that. But
yeah, because right now we're going on 20 hours. This thing happened 20 hours ago, and we still don't know who the perpetrator was.
Right.
So it's kind of interesting to me, and I would like to know why they're holding that back. Grant, I appreciate you calling in. 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. But, I mean, again, we can second guess those people in the restaurant all we want to, and whether or not somebody could have been there with a concealed weapons permit or what have you. But again, until you're in that situation, you just do not know. That's why you've got to get that proper training.